Welcome to the Trump 2024 convention, brought to you by Project 2025. This week in the horrible city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you'll see the best of the Trump Project 2025 party. It's a bold vision for a bright future. With Trump Project 2025, you'll love how new tariffs will make everything more expensive and set off runaway inflation. We know you'll appreciate paying for the big tax cut our struggling billionaires need. When you seniors are done freeloading, check out Project 2025's plan to end Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. So get out of that nursing home bed and get back to work. And ladies, this convention has so much in store for you. With Project 2025, you'll learn how good you'll have it in the kitchen. Girls, if your marriage isn't working out, you'll need Project 2025's helpful tips to keep the romance alive, even if he's abusive, because we're getting rid of divorce. And if Mr. Wrong gets you pregnant, welcome to motherhood, because we've ended Roe v. Wade, and we're going to criminalize birth control. And minorities, well, you didn't need those silly voting rights anyway. For you Jews, Muslims, Mormons, and other fake religions, you'll get a head start on learning America is a Christian nation. Project 2025 is Donald Trump's plan for your future, and it couldn't be any brighter.
Project 2025 Bright Future Guarantee applies to white evangelical Christian men only. Other conditions may apply. Offer not valid in the functioning republic.
I like it. God for the Lincoln Project.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Redding, a KFOI, and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for emphasis on calm today, Desi Doyen.
You mean you're not enjoying the roller coaster?
Are you enjoying the Republican National Convention so far, Des?
I wouldn't call it enjoying, but I am making it through.
Better than sticking needles in your eyes?
There you go.
There you go. Well, let's start here. The past 3 weeks, at least in my memory, have easily been the most tumultuous three political weeks that I have ever seen in this country. Kicking off, of course, with a disastrous debate appearance by President Biden near the end of last month, followed the very next day by the corrupt right-wing Supreme Court's power grab in its Chevron deference ruling, overturning decades of precedent, giving deference to subject matters like scientists, et cetera, at executive agencies like the EPA, FDA, SEC, et cetera, and instead overturning that deference to judges and corporations instead. That was followed just 3 days later by an even more ridiculously corrupt opinion by our corrupt Supreme Court granting presidents criminal immunity for pretty much any and all crimes that they commit while in office, ignoring the plain text of the U.S. Constitution and defying the very clear intent by its framers to prevent a president from becoming a king. That was followed by Donald Trump's defense attorneys moving to toss out his 34 felony convictions in New York State related to his payment of hush money to a porn star to help him cheat to win the 2016 presidential election, and the subsequent postponement of his sentencing in that case, which had otherwise been scheduled to take place last week, all amidst at least 2 weeks of chaos among Democrats, hand-wringing over whether an apparently quickly aging President Biden, the most effective and progressive president in decades, whether he has the energy and stamina and cognitive ability to take on and defeat the most wildly corrupt and dangerous presidential candidate for any major party in the history of our nation. Followed then by a near-miss assassination attempt on Donald Trump this past weekend by a 20-year-old registered Republican whose motives remain unclear, to say the least, days later. Followed by the dismissal by a corrupt Trump-appointed judge down in Florida of the 40-count criminal indictment against Donald Trump for stealing highly classified national security documents upon leaving office and refusing to return them to the government. Followed by the National Convention, Republican Convention, remaining on schedule despite the weekend assassination attempt and Donald Trump's subsequent naming of Ohio's first-term U.S. Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate, a former Trump opponent who called Trump voters, quote, idiots, and suggested that he might be, quote, America's Hitler, but who has since become a toady who fully opposes any and all military aid to our besieged Democratic allies in Ukraine, and who has called for a full nationwide ban on abortion, even in cases of rape and incest. And speaking of rape, the Republican Party at the same time, as expected, went on to formally and overwhelmingly nominate a twice impeached, four-time indicted, 34-time felony convicted, adjudicated rapist and criminal fraudster as their presidential standard bearer for the 2024 election, all as the battle among Democrats and anti-Trumpers as to whether President Biden should remain on the Democratic ticket had largely gone underground in recent days, only to rear its public head yet again today, including with a report that California's Democratic U.S. Senate nominee, Congressman Adam Schiff, has also now called for Joe Biden to step aside before the party's convention in Chicago next month. Now, I'm sure I have missed a few noteworthy things along the way there, given this unprecedentedly mad whirlwind of a news cycle. Quote, a more zen person than I would urge you to embrace the uncertainty, quipped TPM's David Kurtz in his morning memo newsletter this week, adding, I'm just trying to hold on for dear life. Yep, me too. Which is why whenever I find myself holding on for dear life, I frequently turn to some of my fellow OG bloggers who have been at this as long as I for about two decades now, at the very least for a reality check on if things are really as insane as they seem, and if they are, to get a sense from people I trust about what is actually going on and what, if anything, can or should be done about it. And if the answer is nothing more than, well, keep holding on for dear life, at least we'll be holding on with dear friends. I know we just spoke to these folks on air just last week, but given the past few tumultuous days alone, I felt like I needed to call them back for more. Joining us once again today to try and make sense of it all are our dear friends and fellow OG bloggers and broadcasters, award-winning columnist Heather Digby Parton of Salon and the Hullabaloo blog, and the man who blogs as Driftglass, tweets as Mr. Electrico, and is occasionally known as Just Bill from the Pro Left podcast, produced each week from what he describes as flyover country, Illinois. Hey, welcome back to both of you on just another 2024 day in America. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Morning.
Glad to be here.
I must say, after our previous on-air group therapy session last week, justifiably or not, I actually felt somewhat better about the world. So let's see if we might be able to make that happen again today. But as of the thankfully failed attempt again, by a registered Republican to kill Donald Trump over the weekend at a rally in Pennsylvania. Well, our topsy-turvy world seems to have become even topsier and turvier, though oddly, and maybe ironically, the almost normalness of this week's Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, as insane as it has been, but again, that's, you know, by now pretty normal for these things, has actually somewhat helped me to get my sea legs back a little bit. Heather Digby Parton, let me start with you. How you doing?
Well, I'm, you know, I'm doing a lot of day drinking. Let's put it that way.
Good,
you know,
idea.
We all have our ways of coping. That just happens to be mine at the moment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. Well, you know, the litany of you know, the events over the past 3 weeks, it's just astonishing.
It's mind-blowing.
I mean, it really is. I mean, I can't even believe it. And then, you know, I actually was watching live on Fox News,
uh-huh,
because this is my job. I do this for you people. I hope you understand. And I was watching Fox News when the actual attempt was made,
yeah,
and watched it live,
oh,
and went, oh, my dear God. And, you know, I agree with you that, you know, thank goodness that it wasn't worse, although,
mm-hmm,
it did tragically kill someone,
yep,
and injured a couple of more. So,
yep,
it wasn't exactly just, you know, nothing.
Right.
But I am thinking about the consequences if that had happened, if the worst had happened there. I was just, you know, let's just put it that way. Yeah, I drank a lot,
yeah,
on Saturday.
Oh, I don't blame
you. Know, that was the only thing to do.
Now, I know there were a lot of folks, you know, after that attempted assassination in Pennsylvania who thought, oh, well, that's it. Donald Trump wins for sure now.
Why?
I don't know. Are you one of those people?
No, I didn't think so. I didn't think he was a shoo-in. I mean, it just, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, was there going to be retaliation? Would it turn out to be some kind of a terrorist attack? Was it some, you know, lone Democrat? I had no idea what was going to happen or how people would react. But I didn't assume, as everyone else did, that suddenly, well, you know,
yeah,
he's in now. Look at him. He's martyred. And I mean, to me, and I think to a lot of people, his reaction as it was happening was a little bit ludicrous. I mean, him popping his head up and shaking his fist, it all seemed, you know, to be honest with you, a little hammy. Reality show stuff. And not that I questioned the authenticity of the, mm-hmm, of the event. I wasn't one of those folks, but I didn't think that anything he did or the way the crowd reacted or anything about it suggested that this was going to be some kind of a big turning point. And in fact, it turns out that it hasn't. None of the polls that they've done since then, and, you know, the sort of snap, mm-hmm, polls right after, showed no movement in the polls over this. I don't think it made a difference.
Driftglass, you have historically offered a sort of a broader perspective on events like this that we're dealing with now. How does the attempted assassination of a presidential candidate, as you see it, change or not change the tenor of this contest moving forward?
Well, it doesn't change anything. I mean, the old school bloggers watch the movement of the media and right, like the Midwesterners watch the Doppler radar. What are the patterns? What's going on? And who's saying what? And who's passing the memo around? And what's the new party line? And I'll just tell you that we have a commissioner named Sean Morrison. He's the Republican Party commissioner in Cook County.
You broke up a little bit. You said he's the Republican Party commissioner in Cook County, Illinois?
Yes.
Okay.
There are Republicans, all four of them in Cook County.
I gotcha.
And he's the commissioner. And 3 days ago, he was screaming for blood. The Democratic leftist extremist politician gin up and gaslight the people with vitriolic rhetoric. We know whose hands are bloody on this, right? 3 days later, the danger of vitriolic language in politics, a call for civility by the same guy.
Mm.
So I think the minute the conversation turned from some guy took a shot at Trump to, oh, a registered Republican took a shot at Trump. Mm. Oh, a nut job with an AR-15 took a shot at Trump. Maybe we should pivot this conversation to a discussion of crazy people with military-style weapons. And that's when people decided we're not going to talk about anything that like that right now, because the Democrats would come in and go, we told you crazy people are dangerous. We told you they shouldn't have these types of weapons. What the hell what do we have to do? What has to happen for you people to get that through your head? And that's a conversation Republicans do not want to have at all.
Yep.
And so suddenly it became, you know, everyone's to blame.
Right.
You know,
Brad,
everyone's language is equally bad, equally vitriolic, and everyone needs to calm down.
Unity. We need to calm things down.
Yeah. And if you watch the, you know, media Doppler radar, that is the mainstream media's way of saying, Democrats, please shut up about Donald Trump being a danger to society. We don't want to hear that right now.
Well,
we want to hear how serene he is.
Right. And that's, you know, and obviously I want to, well, sort of want to get to this week's Republican convention and you know, what we might be learning from that. But I want to stick with the Democratic side of things here for a bit, because this interview with Joe Biden by NBC's Lester Holt on Monday following the assassination attempt, pressing Biden on whether his rhetoric, Biden's rhetoric, you know, accurately calling out Trump as a threat to our democracy, if that was somehow to blame for the shooting, or whether he has failed to cool the political rhetoric even after calling for it in at least three different addresses, by my count, to the nation, to cool the rhetoric. That whole interview seemed like, I don't know, just sort of a trap to me, but kind of the very picture of what is wrong with our current corporate mainstream media.
Well, we old school bloggers are familiar with a group of people called the Tone Police.
Mm-hmm.
The Tone Police come rolling out every time the Democrats start punching back, shouting back, bringing receipts to the party. That's something that the system can't tolerate that. So suddenly, once if Democrats are too quiet, then we're being weak. There has to be there's a perfect tone somewhere in there. I've never quite gotten it, where exactly the right language. If I just use exactly the right language, then reform will come and everything will change. Which is BS. That's never going to happen. It is we don't want to hear a bunch of liberals who we hate anyway talk about the fact that they were right all along, and bring receipts to the party and point out the fact that we have never done our job. The corporate media is a catastrophe and a joke. So we're going to attack your tone. Whatever you say, it'll be wrong. And if you know that going in, you can judge the honor of the person who's asking the questions. I noted that Jonathan Chait interpreted that Lester Holt interview by saying that Lester Holt did a good job because he interpreted the unintelligible grunts as words, as Han Solo interprets Chewbacca.
Really?
You know,
that's what he said?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's an ally. That's an ally of ours talking right there.
Okay.
Well, sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
Of ally, yeah.
Anyway.
But anybody who saw the interview would disagree with that characterization. I mean,
yes,
it was
absolutely
obviously very intelligible. Biden was fine.
Yeah.
Boy. Go ahead.
As the lyric goes, the man sees what he wants to see and disregards the rest.
There you go. Well, speaking of, I guess, sort of Democratic on Democratic violence, the polls, Heather, as you point out, following Biden's disaster, both his disastrous debate appearance last month and now, some of the few polls that we have seen since the weekend shooting, do not seem to show any particular shakeup in either direction. Biden continues to narrowly trail Trump nationally by a point or two, as he did prior to all of this, to that whole litany I just ran through at the top of the segment there. That, while the debate about whether Biden should stay on the ticket seems to have been tamped down a little bit, or at least has gone, you know, a bit quieter since the shooting, with Biden insisting all along that he was staying on the ticket, at least until today. It had been quiet, as it's now being reported that Congressman Adam Schiff, who's running for U.S. Senate out here in California, has called himself for Joe Biden to step down. Your thoughts on that? Has anything been settled in this matter at all? And if it hasn't, well, what now?
Well, I don't know what's going on, but something's going on. And even though it had seemed like it was quieting down, and after Biden gave his NATO press conference last week, people sort of thought, well, you know, there were supposed to be like 40 congressmen who were going to come out and, you know, demand that he withdraw, and that didn't happen. But there's still, all this stuff has still been going on, obviously. And they put out a letter demanding that they get cancel the virtual convention that had been put together for the Ohio ballot situation.
Yeah, they were going to do a virtual roll call because the Ohio state legislature had a deadline for when, you know, they needed the official word on who was running. Now, Ohio has since changed that law, so they don't need to do an early virtual roll call beginning either on Monday, I think, July 22nd, or Monday, July 29. They can actually wait until the convention before they have their official nominee, but there is continues to be some word that the Democrats want to get this done early to avoid, I guess, any problem, get it done this month to avoid any problem at the Democratic convention.
Well, from what I understand, they have decided as of this moment when we're talking here, that they are going to postpone the virtual roll call into August.
Okay.
And the people who were demanding it are saying, well, we still want to, you know, cancel the thing, but now we've got some time to do something. And I'm not sure what that's about.
Okay.
But obviously, there's still a lot of you know, churn going on within the Democratic Party. We've heard leaks about phone calls that Joe Biden had with members of the House that were contentious and unpleasant. And there was Adam Schiff had been quoted at some fundraiser saying that Biden couldn't win. And then today he comes out with this this statement saying that he thought Biden should withdraw. And everybody assumes that Nancy Pelosi, who is his great ally, they're both from California, that she must have been in on it. She puts out a statement that she didn't know anything about it. So who knows? Who knows what's going on? But I will say this, that, you know, there are a couple of dynamics that are happening here that I don't, frankly, don't understand. And I think there must be something that we're not seeing about this, because if you look at the polling, it's just static. It is stuck. It's been stuck. And this has been, as you just pointed out, the most tumultuous 3 weeks in politics that any of us can remember, and particularly for Joe Biden, who has just been pummeled from every angle. And I was totally expecting, I thought, you know, within 2-3 weeks, we're going to see if he can't make it, he's going to be in free fall, right? I mean, there's going to be some real drop in the polls. People are just going to know. And even people, you know, sophisticated people who understand how polling works would say they're not going to vote for Joe Biden just to get him off the ticket with all this discussion about that, right? It's just not happening. What they're saying is, They would like to see a different candidate. But when asked, well, would you vote for him? Absolutely. I'd crawl over hot coals to vote for a fetid pile of garbage over Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So it's a very strange dynamic in that respect. And you know, Donald Trump's ceiling has remained. He is not going up. All that happens is that Joe Biden bounces around a little bit, 2-3 points. That some battleground states have shown him, you know, in the, you know, losing some ground. Others show him holding steady. I mean, it's just, there's a very, this is very, very strange. And I don't know what's happening within the Democratic Party, within the official Democratic Party, that accounts for this idea that they need to, you know, just keep pushing and pushing and pushing on this. Because, you know, at some point, somebody's got to look around and go say, hey, are we making things worse? You know, are we actually making him lose by doing this? I mean, regardless of how you feel about him and whether he should be the candidate, at some point you'd think that they do that, but it's not happening. So I'm, you know, a little bit stymied. I honestly don't know what's happening that's making them continue to push like this.
Yeah, and it is interesting. I mean, the fact that, and I should note, you know, the fact that the polls have sort of remained the same way, that's not, I'm not saying that to suggest that is a good thing, because in fact, Democrats needed, and it was the reason for that early debate, was they, you know, they needed to see Biden's poll numbers go up, and they really haven't. They have in some cases a little bit, but they're remaining generally the same, which is really interesting when you have, you know, when you ask Democrats, a majority of them think Biden should drop out, and yet, if you ask Americans whether Donald Trump is qualified to be president, a majority of them say absolutely not, all of which has left the polls exactly where they are. Last week, Digby, you argued that if Biden was going to drop out, you really wanted him to do it on the night that Donald Trump was to officially accept his party's nomination. I think that's a Thursday. It doesn't look like that's going to happen this week, but
well, who knows? I mean, you've got this thing with Schiff, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, geez, you know, could that actually happen? I mean, I am not in favor of Democrats coming out and trying to suck the oxygen out of our, you know, bashing of J.D. Vance and Project 2025 and Donald Trump during the RNC, right? I mean, I don't want to be talking about anything but that right now. These people are on stage. They're all over TV. Let's talk about what a disaster these people are.
Well,
instead, we've got Adam Schiff coming out and saying, you know, well, I think Biden should step down and all this other stuff. But if it's leading up to Biden dropping out on, you know, tomorrow night, on Thursday night, Well, okay.
Well,
if you're going to do it, that's the time, as far as I'm concerned.
That would be, seems unlikely, but we will be talking about Vance and the RNC in a moment. But let me get Drifty's thought here. How does this, we'll call it airing of concerns about Joe Biden, either help or hurt the Democratic ticket, if at all, as you see it?
Well, I think the bases of both parties are pretty well locked in. I mean, if you ask me a question, Drift Class, would you like a Lamborghini? I'm going to say, yeah, I'd like it to be driven by Johnny Unbeatable. You know, that's my dream ticket.
Yeah.
But then you turn around and say, Drift Class hates Chevrolets. That's the problem. No, I never said that. What I said was I would like a better vehicle, one not currently being available. I will take the one I have because it'll get me where I want to go. It's that second question that gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
The right are dug in. I mean, they are a proto-fascist, homegrown American party rallying behind a lunatic, rapist monster. That's who they are. And a whole lot of Democratic voters, especially the more practical ones, see that and go, you know what? Joe's my guy. I don't care. I don't care what we have to do to push him across the finish line. If he chooses to drop out, I know I said this the other day.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, too. I'll vote for whoever's at the top of the ticket. But right now, the leader of our party is Joe Biden. His vice president is Kamala Harris. They're both well qualified to run the country based on what they've done for the last 3 years, and I'm with them. And then you have a bunch of elected Democratic officials and pundits who read the New York Times and who are just soaking in this panic and hysteria and public bedwetting. And anyone who disagrees with my opinions, I'd like to have a calm, rational conversation in good faith with all these idiots who think I don't know what I'm talking about. No, they don't. They're stuck in this loop where they're terrified of what the Acela Corridor is writing. They're terrified of what the pundits are saying because that's the world they live in. And I strongly urge them to come home and talk to their constituents because us constituents have a thing or two to tell them about what we want them to do. And what we want them to do is back the party, get in line, and be like Republicans. You know, get in line, stand behind your leader and fight like hell. I mean, that's what they do. And occasionally it works. And I don't understand why the Democratic leadership cannot fathom why that's a good idea. I have a theory that they just got drunk on Barack Obama. They want a thoroughbred. They want a surefire winner. They want someone who can do everything.
Right.
His policy prescriptions were, you know, mixed at best. And he was Mr. Both Sides, Mr. Centrist, Mr. Let's Reach Across the Aisle. And that's who they think a president should be. And Joe Biden isn't that guy. And they really just want that Lamborghini. And they keep looking in the fridge, and there's no Lamborghini in the fridge. Yeah. I don't know what to do.
Well, I will tell you, and I got to get to a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the convention. But, you know, looking at this, whatever they decide to do, whatever the Democrats decide to do, whether they want to run Joe Biden, whether they want to run Kamala Harris, whether they want to open it up to a chaotic convention, it seems to me that they have a set of policy ideas, policy priorities that are wildly popular with the American people. And it actually seems to me, if you look at the polls, everybody, whether it's, you know, Kamala Harris or Joe Biden or anyone else, does about the same right now in the polling. against Donald Trump. Actually, Harris does a few points better. But it seems to me, in some sense, it actually doesn't matter who is at the top of the ticket. Right now, they've got Donald Trump on the other ticket, wildly unpopular among the American people, and they've got a set of policy prescriptions that are wildly popular with the American people. So whatever they decide to do, it seems to me like they ought to run on those policies loudly and clearly right now and spend your time doing that rather than debating at least publicly about who's going to be at the top of the ticket, because polling numbers actually suggest to some degree it doesn't seem to matter. Don't know if I'm wrong about that or not, but that's my take. Let me take a quick break here. We will come back with Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Hullabaloo and the great Drift Glass of the Pro Left podcast. Right here on the broadcast, I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
Obviously, right now, unity is a theme that we need to be focused on.
I think that we're going to hear a lot of unifying type speeches.
We got to create some unity. The vitriol and the hatred, it needs to stop.
We should bring the temperature down.
Let's turn this moment into a moment that helps us down that path of healing and unity.
Welcome to Wisconsin. It is an honor and privilege to represent the good, decent, hardworking, and very nice people of Wisconsin in the U.S. Senate. Today's Democrat agenda, their policies, are a clear and present danger to America.
Come together right now over me.
That's right, Ron Johnson. Democrats are a clear and present danger to America, except for that Republican guy who tried to kill your presidential nominee. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Drift Glass of the Pro Left podcast. All right, guys, let's talk about the Republican ticket and their convention so far this week. Kicked off with Donald Trump's triumphant appearance with a bandaged ear following the shooting on Saturday, the attempted assassination, and his announcement that Ohio senator and former Trump opponent turned Trump toady J.D. Vance would be his vice presidential running mate. Heather Digby Parton, why was J.D. Vance selected, and what effect, if any, does his nomination as Trump's VP have on this race?
Well, first of all, I just have to say that I came across a tweet that said that if Josh Duggar and mayonnaise had a child, it would be J.D. Vance.
That's so mean to mayonnaise, but okay.
It is.
Okay.
It may even be mean to Josh Duggar in that sense.
Yes, it is.
I wrote about this. I had, you know, sort of was really curious about why Trump chose J.D. Vance. He had several on his short list. He had Doug Burgum, the governor of North Dakota. He's a successful businessman. And I thought maybe he would choose him because he kind of looks like he should be on Money. You know, he's a central casting kind of guy. Yeah. And he, you know, is a successful billionaire. And I thought they could run if, you know, it might be a smart move to try to attract some of those more establishment, you know, never Trumper types. Maybe by having, you know, the successful businessman ticket, which, of course, we know Trump is not a successful businessman, but Burgum is. True. And maybe he could, you know, sort of pick that up.
And then he seems Rubio. Normal and not insane.
Right.
And stuff like
he's
that.
Not. Yeah. He could be a good Mike Pence if he could really, really get that look on his, that adoring look on his face.
Right.
You know? And then there was Rubio, who, you know, the Hispanic vote, and he's kind of an establishment guy. So maybe people might think, some of those suburban moms might think, well, you know, he's a regular Republican. He's not so bad. So there were reasons to think that some of these people, Tim Scott, theoretically could bring in some of the black vote, although really it would be about getting in some of the white vote that's kind of a little squeamish about all the racism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, same thing with Rubio. But honestly, J.D. Vance brought nothing to the table.
Right.
And, you know, he's just MAGA all the way. He's just nothing but, you know, hardcore MAGA. And it's not even really the kind of regular MAGA people with the Trump yard, Trump signs in their yard. It's a real online MAGA people. I mean, he is in deep, you know, the Tucker Carlson yeah. mm-hmm. people. I mean, he is, it's even the subset of MAGA that mm-hmm. he really appeals to. So, and that is not what Trump needs. I mean, Trump's looking at the same polls. We've seen his ceiling. He's having trouble with suburban women. He's having trouble, you know, I mean, people talking about the black vote and the Latino vote and all that stuff that he's really making inroads. It's not true. You're looking at the polling. It's not true. And most of those voters are coming home to the Democrats anyway. So what was the purpose of this? Why did he pick J.D. Vance? And so I looked into it and I was trying to think, you know, what would he see as the advantage there? Well, part of it is he saw him on TV. He would appear on Tucker Carlson's show, and he kept commenting about how he looked, that he has those beautiful, beautiful blue eyes. I'm not kidding. This is in the New York Times.
That,
he actually has said this over and over again.
Trump was commenting on J.D. Vance's eyes. Okay.
Loves them. Beautiful okay. blue eyes. Well, beautiful, beautiful blue eyes. Okay. He said it repeatedly, apparently. Okay. So
he looks good
really
on TV.
Yeah, he really finds him an attractive kind of person, I guess. And so then he, you know, and then he's on Tucker Carlson and he defended him ably. And we know that that's a bottom line requirement of any vice president or anybody that Trump is around. And then it turns out that all of his advisors, this is according to several deep dives into this from NBC and the New York Times and others who have good connections in Trump world, who said that, you know, Kellyanne Conway, she was pushing hard for Rubio. She did not think J.D. Vance was a good idea. And she thought that Rubio would be a much smarter, you know, based on demographics, would be a much smarter choice.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Rupert Murdoch, a very powerful guy in MAGA world, right? In Republican
yeah.
world.
Yeah.
He actually flew into the Republican convention and dispatched a bunch of people to try and get Trump to not pick Vance, who he thinks is a disaster, and to pick Burgum instead, probably for the reasons that I just mentioned.
Yeah. Well, these are all the reasons to not pick Vance.
Why not pick Vance?
Yeah.
So why
did
he?
Yes.
Well, it turns out he has three people that he is leaning on for advice on personnel. Number one is Tucker Carlson, who called up Trump when he heard he was wavering on Vance and said to him that Vance was going to start nuclear war if he picked him. And that Burgum and Rubio would start nuclear war, that
okay.
Vance was the only one who wouldn't start a nuclear war. And apparently Trump was very impressed with this particular argument.
Mm.
And now that's crazy.
Mm.
But the two that really put him over the top are his two top advisors on personnel, Don Jr. and Eric Trump. And they are huge fans of J.D. Vance. In fact, Don Jr. is a personal friend and they, you know, get together, I guess, on a social level.
Mm-hmm.
And they were adamant that he had to pick J.D. Vance. They're very connected in that ultra online MAGA world. You know, they go out to all these events with all these crazy, you know, soothsayers and Mike Flynn people. They're involved in all that stuff.
Oh.
And this is who they are. And this is who Trump is listening to now. So I just want to say, you know, I mean, I don't know, you know, J.D. Vance is all in on Project 2025. And we know that if he gets the chance, he will be happy to take that policy portfolio mm-hmm. from Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But what this really says to me is that Donald Trump has lost a step. And he kind of knew that Vance was a bad idea. He kept wavering back and forth. He was listening to other people. But when the chips were down, he listened to his boys. And he did what his boys said. Hmm. And I think Donald Trump is not quite in the driver's seat anymore. And, you know, for all the concerns about Joe Biden missing a step and being too old and blah, 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 I think maybe, you know, the 78-year-old guy who lives on cheeseburgers and Diet Coke might not be all there either. And in a way that really defies his, you know, his image and his reputation.
It is a very strange pick, because it seems of all the, you know, his supposed shortlist, him and Rubio and Burgum and then some of the others, J.D. Vance seems sort of the easiest one to go after and seems to offer the least to the ticket. Here was Vice President Kamala Harris responding to the selection of J.D. Vance for the vice presidential ticket this week in a message to supporters.
Hey, everyone. So Donald Trump has picked his new running mate, J.D. Vance. Trump looked for someone he knew would be a rubber stamp for his extreme agenda. And make no mistake, J.D. Vance will be loyal only to Trump, not to our country. And unlike Mike Pence, Vance said he would have carried out Trump's plan to overturn the 2020 election. He supports a national abortion ban and voted against protecting IVF. And if elected, he will help implement the Extreme Project 2025 plan for a second Trump term, which would target critical programs like Head Start and Medicare. But we are not going to let that happen.
So, national ban on abortion with no exceptions for rape or incest, which is even farther to the right than Donald Trump is. Vance has said that America should not give one more dime to our Democratic allies in Ukraine. Driftglass, you know, in normal times, you choose a vice president who shores something up that might be lacking from the presidential ticket. Maybe they live in a swing state that you need to win, or, you know, a religious so-called conservative like Mike Pence shores up a three-time married philanderer and a one-time abortion rights supporter with religious right. Do you see anything that either me or perhaps Digby is missing that Vance brings to the table here?
Well, I think you're missing the base. You know, we call them over at the Professional Law Podcast, the reprogrammable meatbags, because okay. It doesn't matter what you do. You know, they just change out the software and change out the firmware, and they believe whatever they're told tomorrow. So the people who are telling Trump to do this, I think absolutely Tucker Carlson was big on the list. Yeah, I don't know if you know about this phone call he allegedly made from Australia telling Donald Trump that if you pick a neocon, and who does the base hate more, liberals or neocons? They hate the neocons.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
The Iraq war was some other party did that.
Right.
And that wasn't us, and we hate those people.
Right.
And that if you put a neocon on the ticket, then U.S. intelligence, and I'm reading from the New York Times, U.S. intelligence agencies would have every incentive to assassinate Mr. Trump. So if he puts a neocon on the ticket, the deep state will bump him off.
Oh, good Lord.
So they can get their guy in office.
Oh, good Lord.
And the other person who's lobbying is a multi-billionaire named Elon Musk, who is insane, who is just insane, and is willing to cut Donald Trump checks for $45 million a month, apparently, from now until doomsday.
Yep.
So I don't know. Trump is listening to one guy that he likes telling him that the deep state will come for him if it's anybody but Vance. And Vance is a perfect little replicant of Trump in, you know, with more years in front of him. And I don't think they're interested in unifying the party or bringing in new people. I think they're interested in creating a united front that is absolutely Ein Reich, Ein Volk, Ein Führer. I mean, we're all one thing now. There are no dissenting views. And watching Nikki Haley bend the knee proved that. That works. So J.D. Vance serves Trump's ego, and there's nothing left of the Republican Party but Trump's ego.
I think there's also perhaps another factor to this, because remember, J.D. Vance has been very clear that he has no interest whatsoever in supporting Ukraine. So if you have Tucker Carlson, who's good buddies with Vladimir Putin, coming over and having influence on Donald Trump's choices, who Donald Trump is also easily influenced by Vladimir Putin, there might be some connection there between the assumption of where policy on Ukraine would go if Trump is elected and if he can't serve out his term, that J.D. Vance, who has, you know what, all of the experience of being an author and a venture capitalist, will suddenly be president and maybe would carry out that particular policy.
Let me ask a few easier questions just for a breather here. Driftglass, why is it that not one single speaker I've seen at the RNC, with the exception of Nikki Haley, I will note, knows how to pronounce the first name of our vice president? Which is, by the way, Kamala, not Kamala. But every single speaker has, other than Nikki Haley, has called her Kamala, as if it's not an accident. Can you explain that?
You mean the same people who called Barack Hussein Obama for 8 years. I mean, those guys.
Are they doing it on purpose? Or they just don't know any better because Fox News calls her that?
You mean the members of the Democrats Party? I mean, right. You know, it's that petty BS that they do. I mean, this really is playground third grade bullying nonsense that motivates their party. So being intentionally obnoxious, being intentionally dismissive and rude and stupid to trigger the libs works great. Mm. I mean, the entire convention is, you know, a drunk, a pornographer, and a fascist walk into a bar. That's the whole convention. and watching Giuliani, you know, nearly pass out, and watching Amber Rose do her rap thing, and watching J.D. Vance get up and practically, you know, well.
Careful. Yeah.
Careful. Yeah. Honor the fatherland in the only way he knows how.
Okay.
That's the party. And the convention was not for me or for you. It was for the screaming lunatics, and there weren't a whole lot of them at the convention. It certainly looked like a pretty puny affair. And the lunatics in the field, to give them all the red meat they could eat, and they provided. It was a buffet of that sort of nonsense.
And yet, Digby, I have yet to hear any of the dozens of speakers at the RNC this week, though I did not see all of them, but I tried to see as many as I could. I didn't see any of them mention a stolen 2020 election. Why is that? Trump's entire campaign for re-election has sort of been built on that idea up until now. Why are they running away from that idea at this convention?
Well, evidently, they've all been told that this is not, you know, that their unity convention is not supposed to mention that little bit of unpleasantness. But of course, it's unavoidable. And I really kind of blame the media for not making a bigger deal out of it, mm-hmm. because it truly is a big deal. None of, you know, Trump's cabinet members, I think Ben Carson is the only former, you know, cabinet member that's there. Maybe there are a couple that ran for Congress that, you know, ended up being in the Congress.
Right.
His vice president, obviously, as we were going through all of this drama over who's he going to pick and blah, 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 the media didn't make it clear that the reason he had to pick somebody is because his former vice president refuses. He tried, you know, he incited a mob that tried to kill him, and that he refuses to endorse him and vote for him. And that all their former, you know, the George W. Bush, last president before Donald Trump, nowhere to be found. Dick Cheney, the vice president, nowhere to be found. I mean, there's families of people all over the place. Where are the McCains? You know, where are all these people? So it's like they're pretending like the Republican Party was founded in 2016. It just that was the day that they became the party that they are today. And in some ways, that's absolutely true.
Because it
is the MAGA party.
They couldn't even trick Dan Quayle into showing up at this convention.
Oh, well, he's persona non grata because he advised Mike Pence not to usurp the Constitution.
Yeah, no, it is remarkable for all of the unity. All of those former presidents, vice presidents, presidential candidates who are apparently not welcome or invited. Driftglass, and actually both of you, I've been watching mostly CNN, their coverage, because they're actually running the speakers. You know, MSNBC is talking to each other over them. That said, when the CNN anchors and pundits do talk in between and after speakers and so forth, they're reporting on all of this like it's pretty much a normal political convention during a normal campaign, suggesting things are pretty much, you know, just normal political times. But it isn't, at least in my opinion. The stakes this year are so much, much higher beyond anything that I think any of the cable news networks are adequately getting across to their viewers. And I don't know what the answer is to this question. So I'm frankly wondering if you do, or if I'm just wrong about that and over worried about, that what is just really politics as usual.
Well, Brad, the media is fine. It's fine. Everyone's a professional. It's like Walter Cronkite never left us. We're all good. They report on the truth. We talked about on the Professional Love podcast this week, a perception experiment called the Invisible Gorilla. Are you familiar with this one?
I am not.
It's a wonderful little experiment. You have a bunch of people in black shirts and white shirts, and you tell the viewer, count how many times the white shirt passes to the white shirt. Focus on that, concentrate on that. And they ran this experiment several times, and in the middle of it, it's a small room. It's like, you know, 15, 20 feet across. A man in a gorilla suit walks right through the middle of the group, stops, beats his chest, and walks off. And the people who were then observing are asked how many passes were made, and they got it mostly right. And they were asked, did you notice the guy in the gorilla suit? And they're like, what gorilla suit? What are you talking about? And the media has trained itself not to see what it doesn't want to see. So it didn't see the convention you and I saw. It demanded, the narrative of the media demands that this be a normal political race between two normal political parties. And they're not going to report it any other way. And we just have to we don't have to get used to that, but we have to take judicial note of it. We have to observe it for what it is. The media is completely broken. It's not going to get any better anytime soon. MSNBC has gone way off the res when it comes to bashing Biden. And a whole lot of people I know are just sick of it. They're just tuning out completely because they're tired of hearing people tell them what they're seeing with their own eyes is not happening. And it's happening right across the entire spectrum.
Well, they're actually not seeing it at all. If they're watching MSNBC, they're not seeing anything with their own eyes because they're not showing any of the speakers. For example, MSNBC is there in Milwaukee, but they're just, talking to each other. Had I not switched over to CNN, I never would have heard Sean O'Brien at all. And I want to play a quick clip here. Well, I want to get your thoughts on this. This is Teamster President Sean O'Brien. He spoke on the first night of the convention, apparently, the first union leader, the first Teamster to speak to a Republican convention in more than 120 years. And it was, to say the least, kind of a bizarre moment, certainly at a Republican convention.
You know what I see? An American worker being taken for granted. Workers being sold out to big banks, big tech, corporates, and the elite against gigantic multinational corporations. An individual worker has zero power. It's only when Americans band together in democratic unions that we win real improvements on wages, benefits, and working conditions. Remember, elites have no party. Elites have no nation. Their loyalty is to the balance sheet and the stock price at the expense of the American worker. But the corporate elite treat us like squatters, and that is a crime. We need legal protections that make it safer for workers to get a contract. Labor law must be reformed. Americans vote for a union but can never get a union contract. We need corporate welfare reform. The biggest recipients of welfare in this country are corporations, and this is real corruption. We must put workers first.
Now, Drift Glass, I heard you groan before I played him. That was the Teamster President Sean O'Brien speaking at the Republican National Convention. It was actually, I thought, a killer speech, but seemingly the exact opposite of what Republicans have long fought for. Now, he did not endorse the Republicans or the Republican ticket. He said he would be willing to speak at the Democratic convention as well. But what was that about?
Well, did you see his one-on-one interview?
I did not.
He had a one-on-one interview. I'm not sure. Dana Bash, maybe? I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But he was asked about that speech and like, what the hell, man? And what about Joe Biden? And the same Sean O'Brien said, yeah, Biden's been the most pro-union president ever, and he fixed our pensions and he stood with unions and the question that lingered in the air was, what do they have on you? what are they holding over your head, man? Because this Biden has stood literally physically stood with union members, fought for union members, gotten their pension, and he knows all this. O'Brien knows all this, and yet he'll still go in front of the Republican convention and see what deal he can cut with them.
But he wasn't supporting the Republicans. He was actually, the things he were saying were all the things that Republicans do not believe in, which is why it was so amazing that he was there. I mean, if he shows up at the Democratic convention, ends up, endorsing Joe Biden, doesn't that sort of mean he just catfished the Republican convention?
I deal with a lot of union people around here, as you know, the state capital, and a whole lot of union people love Donald Trump. And it doesn't matter what you tell them. And they love the Republican candidates. And it doesn't matter what you tell them. It's that old hard hat mentality from the 60s. It's still alive. They just don't believe that the Democrats are on their side. And it doesn't matter how much you show them that they're on their side. It doesn't matter how many times you look at them and say, he negotiated this and he got the railroad strike resolved. He got that fixed as well. Oh, that's all great. But I still want to go in front of the Republicans because the Republicans see themselves. The base sees themselves as the party of working people. They're being, you know, they're being used and they're being scammed and they're being conned and they're being brainwashed by clowns and fascists at the top of the party. But that's how they see themselves. So they see this as, well, of course, we're all for this, right? Everybody here is all for this, right?
Mm.
And they can be lied to all day long. And they're never going to stop supporting the Republicans.
And just showing up there kind of now they're going to be able to tell themselves, oh, look, we support unions. We support workers.
Sure.
Digby, I've got really literally not even 1 minute. sorry about this. Is there anything or anybody's speech or you know, presence at the GOP convention that jumped out at you at the RNC so far?
Actually, no. I mean, it's been pretty predictable as far as I can see. There's been nothing that really, it's been a slightly dull convention, to be perfectly honest. Even the J.D. Vance announcement wasn't really very exciting. And I think that they're not getting what they wanted, which was a big outpouring of national, you know, alliance with Donald Trump having survived his, you know, the assassination attempt. That's not happening either. So, no, I think it's actually pretty, you know, pretty mundane, which is weird for Trump.
Well,
maybe he'll say something in his speech.
I was
going to
say,
really
now that you have said that, you have cursed it.
Right. And
there will be madness to come over the next day or two. And we'll have to call you back in next week to talk about it. Thank you, guys. I got to get out. Heather Digby Parton. You can find her work, of course, at salon.com and every day, damn near every hour, at digbysblog.net. And you can also find her on the site still known as Twitter at digby56. You can find Driftglass and his podcast over at proleftpod.com. His blog is driftglass.blogspot.com, and he is on the insane Elon Musk's Twitter at Mr. _ Electrico. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we got to get out. Thanks to Desi Doyen, our producer, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us continue to do what we try to do every day over your public airwaves. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and insane Elon Musk's site still known as Twitter, I am the Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.